Happy New Year and welcome to Go Mountain Goats podcast. I'm Finlay Wild and my website is gomountaingoats.com. This is episode 10, and of course please feel free to share the podcast with anyone you think might be interested. Episode 10 is quite an unusual format. It's a recording that Martin Stone made in 1987 of a midwinter Bob Graham round, solo unsupported. Now, for those who don't know, Martin was a prolific long-distance runner and pioneer of records and routes in the 80s and 90s. More recently, he's been really active in terms of reporting and chronicling long-distance fell running news and records, and in fact has a section in each fell runner magazine, long-distance roundups section, which is a real source of info on what's happening in the UK. There's a really good article by Neil Talbot in Fellrunner magazine 127, which is called Made of Stone. This is a great profile on Martin. I'm not going to go into a huge amount of depth about all his huge number of achievements over the years. That's maybe something for another interview in due course. A couple of highlights. He was the first person, I believe, to do all the big three rounds in the UK, so the Bob Graham, the Paddy Buckley and Charlie Ramsay's round. He was on the podium for many, many mountain marathons over the years. He was the organiser, actually, of the Low Alpine Mountain Marathon for, I think, 20 years or more, and was the winner with Helen Diamantidis of the iconic 1992 Dragon's Back race in Wales. So I'll just read you Martin's email that started off this conversation, or parts of the email. 'Tis the season of winter Bob Graham's, and it was the shortest day a week ago. To the best of my knowledge, I'm the only person to have completed a solo unsupported midwinter or winter Bob Graham. It took me four attempts between winters 1980 and 86. There have been quite a few solo unsupported attempts in the past few days, and there has never before been so much interest in travelling solo unsupported in midwinter. And actually talking more to Martin, I realised I think there'd been about five attempts on midwinter Bob Graham's. And just in the last week, Shane Oley has become the second person to complete a solo unsupported midwinter Bob Graham, I believe in 23 hours, 26 minutes. Shane's website is shaneoley.com, O-H-L-Y. I had a look now for an article. It's not up yet, but hopefully in the next couple of days. And that'd be really interesting to hear from Shane and see how that went for him. Martin goes on, the day after I completed my Bob Graham in early January 1987, I sat down in my lounge and made a recording about my experience on an old style music cassette. I recently came across the cassette and can't believe it has survived. I played back both sides through my laptop and created two audio files which I stitched together. It's my record of a unique adventure which may never be repeated in such a classic way with the inappropriate kit that was available back in the day. I was deeply affected by the level of jeopardy during that 24-hour period, and this inspired me to record my thoughts the day after I returned home. I have never made a recording before or since about anything. I think it captures the essence of being on your own in the mountains, dealing with serious challenges and staying positive. And it's a really interesting account. I mean, the kit that was available then is definitely nothing like we've got now. I think he says he carried four torches, and his main torch was a hand torch with a 4.5 volt battery and a halogen bulb. So I suppose that was a bit like the Petzl Zoom head torches, if anyone remembers them. But yeah, a hand torch and a woolen pullover and tracksters are mentioned, I think. So, yeah, a different time. And obviously, solo unsupported. He left, as was quite common, I think, at the time, or certainly with other of Martin's records and rounds, it would leave pre-printed safety cards in sort of pre-arranged places so that people would know how far he'd got, or, you know, that he was okay. People could check, you know, from a safety point of view. Although he was, as he'll tell you, he was very keen that it was totally solo unsupported, so he didn't even have people meeting him at road crossings at all. What also comes across in the account is just the really exceptional conditions he had. Just really firm going, you know, icy slopes. And he talked several times about the terrifying seriousness of some of the steep slopes with the kind of equipment of the day. How even a small slip on some of those sections could have been fatal. And we talked a bit on the phone just about how actually modern equipment makes it possible to be much safer in doing these kind of things. Lightweight ice axes and crampons or other forms of spikes are, they're so light and relatively cheap to buy. And you know, there's a lot more courses to, you know, to go on a winter skills course to sort of learn how to use these and move safely in winter mountains. And also, I suppose there's a lot more information out there, you know, online and in books about, methods and potential hazards of winter. There was one article that I was involved a bit with is a recent article on UK hill walking by Kerry Wallace, which is called Walk Before You Run, Winter Skills for Hill Runners. And it really just goes through some of the kind of extra considerations of winter and, sort of different resources, really links to other articles of different resources to, you know, educate yourself and kind of know before you go. So if anyone's sort of thinking about getting into this kind of stuff, then I think I'd really recommend doing that and sort of arming yourself with, you know, some information and building up experience gradually. And coming back to Martin's recording, I mean, it's just clearly was such a very, you know, special defining and memorable time for him out, you know, on his own all those years ago when it really wasn't common to go and try and do winter rounds like this. So really all that's left for me to do now is shut up and let Martin take us back to 1987 and his solo unsupported midwinter Bob Graham round.
This is the story of my winter Bob Graham attempt. Attempt made on the 7th to the 8th of January 1987, starting at 8:45 p.m. on the Wednesday night. I made a previous attempt just before Christmas. Unfortunately, it failed, due almost entirely to the weather conditions. The first section completed successfully as far as Threlkeld, but then a storm sent me scurrying off the Helvellyn Ridge at about 2 a.m. It's strange, but totally undaunted by the first attempt, I spent Christmas thinking when I would next be able to make an attempt, when the weather would be right, when I had the necessary fitness back. I wanted everything to be just right, because I couldn't see myself being motivated to make yet another attempt. And as January proceeded, I could see our typical Arctic weather worsening and making further attempts impossible. And so it was my decision that if I was going to try again, it would be within a week eyesight of the full moon that was due on the 14th of January. The week Monday following New Year heralded good weather, and on Tuesday lunchtime I went out for a gentle training run from work in beautiful conditions. I got back from that run thinking, I should be out running in this. Why am I not starting this run tonight? Why did I go out training at lunchtime? I should be getting ready to run tonight. And yet, not having been back long from Exeter for my Christmas break, nothing was really prepared. there were a number of jobs that needed doing, and a certain amount of food that needed eating, phone calls that needed making to friends in the lakes who would help me out. And although the initial preparation had been done, I really wanted a more relaxed build-up to my second attempt of the year. And so I phoned the Met Office in Manchester on the Tuesday afternoon from work, and I spoke to a very interesting bloke. He gave me lots of useful information and reassured me that not only was the weather going to be decent from 9 p.m. Tuesday night for 24 hours, but also for 24 hours from 9 p.m. on Wednesday night. And so I left work on Tuesday with a great resolve to start Wednesday night at 8:45 p.m. The excitement was there, the adrenaline, and the enthusiasm. I felt good about the attempt. I felt I had every chance of succeeding. Lots of phone calls made that evening. Lots of information absorbed. Final preparations made. Packing done. Food arranged. Crampons tested. Yes, I decided on this attempt because of the icy conditions that I'd met on a recce the previous Saturday to take some heel crampons, the rear part of my Solera adjustable crampons. And these would be fitted on in a special way using a second strap which would fit through the heel bar attachment. And so, another phone call Wednesday afternoon, well, Wednesday lunchtime really, to the Met Office, and I was all set, weather conditions perfect for 24 hours until Thursday night. Only had to be careful of a bit of cloud, a bit of breeze coming in from the south, but so little wind as to be almost unnoticeable. Could you get a better 24-hour period at this time of year? Certainly you couldn't in terms of weather.
I took Wednesday afternoon off, tried to sleep, but couldn't. Just dozed for a couple of hours in the afternoon. All the preparation done, all that was left was to cook myself a final meal at about 5 o'clock, and then leave for Keswick at about 6:30. It's strange how an obsession grows on you and your thoughts are constantly concentrated on a run. Your resolve becomes stronger and stronger, to a point where you think nothing about defeat. Only the sound, the smell of success. And I actually dreamt the night before that what would foil the attempt was a faulty weather forecast. I dreamt, I had a nightmare that the Met Office had got it wrong, and that I would set off in ever-worsening weather and get into a storm again. Well, that didn't happen. Anyway, up to the lakes. Up to Ralph Stevenson's, a member of Keswick Athletic Club. He had kindly agreed to drive me to the start and pick up special cards that I was leaving at two of the road points, and then meet me at the finish. At the finish he'd then take me back to his place and I'd recover the night before coming back to Preston. Got to Ralph's about 8:15, and a few minutes before 9:15 we were outside the Moot Hall. I set off at 9:15 on the dot, carrying quite a heavy sack, about 11 pounds, which contained 4 torches, 3 pairs of gloves, survival bag, spare pullover, spare tracksters,
water bottle, empty at this stage. 13 bars of chocolate, 1.5 pounds of fruitcake and flapjack, 4 cheese and tomato rolls, 8 sachets of Staminade, small first aid kit, the heel crampons. I was well equipped. Hard frost as I ran up Skiddaw, trying not to use any extra energy, going gently, making the best use of my freshness to absorb the surroundings, taking looks back down Derwentwater, a beautiful moon reflecting in the surface of the tarn. Skiddaw was reached, the summit was reached without any trouble at all. Already picked up 2 minutes on the schedule, 1 hour 13 to the top. For a change, there was not a breeze on the top of Skiddaw. I was wearing just a leafer top and a light woolen polo neck pullover, and I felt just great. No need for gloves. With all the activity, the hands were kept quite warm. Come off Skiddaw, perfect visibility. The moon meant that the torch was only needed for 5-10 minute sections. Dropping down through quite soft snow until I came out of the snow level at about 1700 feet. Crossed the bog at the bottom of Skiddaw and then up the stream bed to a point where you break off to go up Great Calver. Pause for a drink. Try not to let your feet break through the ice on pools of ice which have formed beside the little streams. Find the line of shooting butts, follow to the top of Great Calver. No problem at all. 4 minutes up by the time I get to the top of Great Calver. Clawing back the minutes without any difficulty at all. Can see Blencathra ahead now. Retrace your steps back from the top of Great Calver for 50 yards. And then head straight for the crags on the side of Blencathra. Fool Crags. Fight your way through the bog and the bracken at the foot of Great Calver, and then a rather cold, knee-deep wade across the River Caldew. Pick up a sachet of Staminade and drink and be refreshed as the long, long climb begins up Mungrisdale Common. No need to take bearings. I've been here before. Only 2 weeks before, in fact. Mungrisdale Common passes. 1,000 feet of climbing out of the way. The ground improves. And I'm jogging across the common to the last steep section which leads up onto the Blencathra Plateau. The weather's so clear, with the moon, that I can aim almost directly for the top of Hall's Fell, the summit of Blencathra. Another 5 minutes gained to the top of Blencathra, without apparent effort. Have to be careful on Blencathra Plateau. I remember falling over and hurting my knee badly on the previous attempt just before Christmas. I see the cairn, the top of Blencathra, and then swap torches from my big rubber hand torch to a Petzl headlamp. Write down the time and then prepare myself for what could be an icy descent into Threlkeld down Hall's Fell Ridge. Concentrate hard now. Every step counts. Hold on to bits of jagged rock wherever possible. Don't rely on your feet to break you. Lower yourself carefully onto any surface that you think could be icy. Watch that hard snow. It might be too hard to take the bite of a PB tread. Yes, not too bad at all. Relatively safe. Just keep holding on with one hand at least whenever you think the going could be dicey. Well, the schedule's 40 minutes for the descent. It takes me 34 minutes. No problem. Quite a jolt. The ground is so hard. You're jarring all the way down the slope. I get to Threlkeld and pass the kennels and drop down the main track to the cement works where we're so often supported on Bob Graham attempts. It's now 12:20 a.m. I'm 15 minutes ahead of schedule. And I rearrange my rucksack. It's not too cold. Well, it's well below freezing, but there's no wind, so it's not bothering me. I write down my time of arrival. I write down on the card to be left there for the supporter to pick up, or Ralph to pick up. I write down my time of departure from there. I get bits of food out of my rucksack and transfer them to my bum bag. I take the torch batteries out of my petrol headlamp and put them into one of my hand torches, which goes back in the sack. And I leave the petrol headlamp and one set of used batteries from the rubber torch on the wall where it was arranged. I leave the map of the section. And a few minutes later, 6 minutes to be precise, I set off from Threlkeld. I know Ralph's lurking somewhere in the village because he said he wanted me to see me off Hall's Fell Ridge safely before he went back to bed. As I approach the outskirts of the village, I see his car 50 yards off to my right. He flashes his headlights, and I flash my torch. My nearest contact in 24 hours with my support group. I have no inclination to go over and speak to him. My attempt is solo, unsupported. You're so motivated to achieve what you set out to do that there's absolutely no reason, no need, no feeling to actually go across and communicate with them. I set off towards Newsham Farm and then head up onto Clough Head. A lot of ice on the roads, especially the little farm tracks. I remember the struggle up Clough Head from 2 weeks prior. Not so bad this time, quite enjoyable in fact. I climb strongly, but even so, I can't make the schedule. There must be an inaccurate section on that schedule. I begin to think ahead now to when it gets light. God, won't it be nice to be in the light, not have to carry a torch, not have to keep rechecking the map. I'll be able to relax when it gets light, I hope. Clough Head passes in under the hour. The snow conditions are wonderful. Bloody hard snow in places, but only right on the ridges, almost flat surfaces. Doesn't matter, you can easily skip across that stuff. Jog at a pleasant speed, very comfortably off Clough Head to Carthow Pike, and then turn more to the southeast for the long slog up Great Dodd. That's nowhere near as bad as 2 weeks ago. Make good time up Great Dodd, and the big iced up cairn appears exactly where I expect it. Off Great Dodd now, heading due south. Pick up Watson's Dodd, a strange little summit which involves next to no climbing, just off to the west of the main ridge. I'm flying now. Everything's going great. I'm conscious that I'm now nearing the point where the storm 2 weeks ago first blew up. Stibara Dodd passes, and then an efficient descent down to Styx Pass. No time being wasted this time, no extra navigation required. I look across to the northeast, and the moon's almost disappearing now. It's a shame. It's been really useful to me. It's about 2 o'clock in the morning. I wish it had stayed with me until daylight. Still, you can't have everything. You can't have everything on your side. The gentle climb up Rays, where I first really noticed the wind 2 weeks before. Oh! Put my leg in up to the knee in a bloody bog. That's going to cause problems. Feet have just thawed out properly from that crossing of the River Coldew and climbing all the way up from the Coldew. My feet, my shoes were icing up and becoming like blocks, although the feet never got too cold. But now I've put my leg in up to the knee in this icy stuff. And I can feel the leafer bottoms beginning to freeze onto my leg. Keep pulling them away so that they have a chance of hardening as a shell rather than being attached to the leg. Rays is reached. God, it's icy on top. Bloody slippery. Oh, I can see Whiteside ahead, and I can see that bloody col where I was stopped 2 weeks ago. It seems easy tonight. No problem at all. Gentle climb up Whiteside. Making good progress now. I don't want to have to keep writing these times down on each summit, so I memorise them. I can see the whole of the Helvellyn Ridge now. I can see Helvellyn Lower Man ahead, and Helvellyn itself. Jog off Whiteside, then steep little pull up onto Helvellyn Lower Man. It's now about 3:20. I'm losing the odd minute, but not bad. Up to the top of Helvellyn. I think I deserve a bit of a break. So I come off from the trig point to the big four-cornered shelter on the summit of Helvellyn, and shelter from the bit of breeze that there is on the top. Really is a beautiful night. Reorganise the kit, have some more food, and remember Selwyn Wright's attempt 3 weeks before, when there's a real party on the top of Helvellyn. God, it's a bit different now. You're on your own. Still, you can make your own entertainment. Well, better get going again. Times are passing. Nethermost Pike next. And I make an error on Nethermost Pike. Same one I made with Selwyn 3 weeks before. I get to the top of Nethermost, or one of the many cairns which could possibly be the top. And then I just have to drop a few yards to the west, the west, to hit the track that's going to take me to Dollywagon. But with a bit of snow on the ground, I miss the track. I drop too low to the west. I see something that looks like Dollywagon to the southwest. It certainly isn't, though, but I think I'm supposed to be heading for it, so I lose more and more height. And then when I finally get a grip on myself and realise what the problem is, and then contour round, I realise I've dropped about 70 to 100 feet below where I should have hit the coal between Nethermost and Dollywagon. Come on, Stone, you can bloody well do better than that. You can't really blame it on the darkness. Still an excellent night. A good line to Dollywagon, and that comes quickly. A hard descent from Dollywagon down to Grisdale Tarn. There's just no giving the ground, and it's bloody icy on this track. You can't keep on the track because you fall over on the rock-hard snow, almost iced. The grass bank has got no giving it at all. You're going down one step at a time, and each step's premeditated. Anyway, could be worse, I suppose. Cross the outlet of Grisdale Tarn. The bog is rock hard, which is nice. Listen for the running water that marks the bottom of the climb onto Fairfield. Head for the running water, find the stream, and get a drink. My God, there's ice on each side of the stream. It's difficult to make crossing these things. Very steep climb up the stream side, the beginning of the path up to the Copperpike Col. Climb steadily. After each pace, you have to stop yourself slipping back by planting the other foot. Wouldn't have to do this in summer. Get onto some rock-hard snow, bits of scree, and then make a mistake. You're supposed to be following a bearing of 102 to lead you to the col at the north side of Fairfield. But I see a route going off right, which I think looks better. I thought it looked better when I did it with Selwyn. But no, it's not a good route. I take it. I climb really steep scree, slowly, gingerly crossing and climbing patches of rock-hard snow to a point where you're not on rock anymore, you're on little pebbles with patches of snow all around. I take a few paces and I suddenly realise that I'm on the last 30 feet to the top of Fairfield. But I'm no longer on any rock. I am on rock-hard snow. I can't retreat. I can't move sideways. I've got to go up this bloody thing. It's lethal, though. It's angled at 45 degrees and getting steeper. And God knows what it's like as it comes right out onto the summit. I'm committed. I put my torch in my mouth. I hold the torch strap in my mouth. The torch is dangling backwards and forwards like a pendulum. The beam playing on my feet. I dig my fingertips into the hard snow. Very little purchase. Can I get my toes into this slope to get some steps? I've got to. I'll never get up it otherwise. Yes, half an inch. Half an inch. I've got to step up on this step. Very gently I pull up, lying my arms on the snow to create friction with my woolen pullover, and then start kicking the next step. Four or five steps. I'm so committed. I become calm, resigned to the fact that I could well come off here. I won't be found until well on into the day. This could be it. There's nothing I can do. I must stay calm and just work and work to get my feet into this slope. God, my toes are hurting like hell. Kick! Kick, you bastard! Kick! Another step. Another two or three steps. and I'm past the steepest bit. The torch swings backwards and forwards, shining light on my feet. I feel the slope slackening, and I lie on the snow, create as much friction and just wriggle up the next few feet. Is it safe to stand up now? Is it safe to make a run for it? I take one final step, and then go for it! 15 feet and I'm on safe ground. Bloody hell, I'm right on the summit. That was a direct route. Stone, you should know better than that. You've been up that route so many times, why ever did you go right? Oh well, I've survived. Top of Fairfield, it's amazing, it's just like an ice rink. Anyway, that must be the worst part of the whole trip. Nothing else could be as dangerous as that. Scurry off Fairfield. Bit of difficulty actually finding this track down the north west ridge. Not as tricky as I expect, and I get down to Grisdale Hawes without too much difficulty. Just one more peak to go on this section. God, I'm so looking forward to getting to Dunmail. Not that there's going to be anybody there, but it's another psychological barrier. Slippery climb up Seat Sandal. Gotta be so careful. I slip once, just grab onto a rock. Coming off Seat Sandal, I take a bearing. You don't take bearings on objects, you take bearings and line them up with stars, and then just run towards a star. I get a good line, I get an excellent line, considering it's one of the mountains you come off with no track. And I drop into Dunmail Rays, pussyfooting down some incredibly hard, steep ground, until I reach the flat bottom raised bridge. I cross over the dual carriageway, then cross the stile the other side, and sit down on the frozen, hard ground. I put on my cagoule and I put on my tracksters to keep warm, whilst I'm sorting out my rucksack and eating some food. Eating's not proving very pleasant, and I'm conscious that I'm not eating anywhere near enough food to keep going and to keep high energy output going. Strange, there's a car parked on Dunmail Rays. I wonder whether it's Ralph's, it's a red one. Well, no, it can't be Ralph's. Light keeps going on in it, and they watch me. They must wonder what the hell I'm doing. A lone torch out on the fell side in the middle of the night. It's about 5:30. I bet it's cold in that car. Temperature must be about -10. Get my rucksack sorted. What gear can I leave here? What am I not going to need? Well, I'm not going to need those crampons. Because I've done the hardest bit now. I'm sure of it. So I leave the crampons. I leave the rubber torch. Yes, the rucksack's lightening a bit. Got problems with my bloody water bottle, though. It's such a cold night that this clanking sound I heard halfway along the Helvellyn Ridge was actually the contents of the water bottle freezing. The plastic stopper's almost completely jammed. And if that won't come out, I'm stuffed. Because you've got to have water up on the high fells during the day. Oh, the top's come out. That's good news. Let's empty out half this ice. I start drinking it, spitting out the bits of ice in the water. It'll be okay when it comes light. The warmth will keep everything liquid. Well, let's get going. Next water stop, below the climb up High Rays. What a hard climb it is up Steel Fell. Especially when the ground's so unyielding. It feels steeper than ever. Keep slipping back as well. I only just keep the schedule going up, Steel Fell. I think it's taken me just over 20 minutes. Ralph will be out at about in about 2 hours to pick up my card. He'll then know that I'm on my way to Wasdale. The way the safety goes is as follows. You pick up a card. You then calculate the time I will arrive at the next point. Add on 2 hours. And then when you phone the next person in the chain, that's Jill McCrill, Gosforth, you tell her that time. And if that time is later than a latest time, which in her case is 1 o'clock, lunchtime, then she goes at 1 o'clock. Otherwise, she goes there earlier. And that way, she should never ever meet me at a road point. No one should. That's the way I want to do it. It's merely a safety precaution. So we're on our way now towards High Rays and towards the land in the lakes that I know best and that I love most. Surely this is going to hype me up a bit, make me feel stronger. The Score Fells, Bow Fell, the Gable section. I'm almost looking forward to them in a way, but not as much as I'm looking forward to daylight. Calf Crag didn't make a very good job of that one. Too far left, fannied around, lost about 5 minutes. I kept slipping around on the hard surface. Dropped down off Calf Crag to the confused area at the col between there and High Rays. Managed to work out the complicated rivers and streams, and then pick the correct stream to follow up towards High Rays. Amazing ice falls all around it. God, you've got to be so careful where you put your feet. Amazing. However good the moon is, or however clear things are, you still have to have a torch on, because otherwise you can't pick up the reflection of the ice. You're just looking for that glint, that warning glint which tells you of black ice. Climb up to High Rays. Quite deep snow, about 9 inches in places. Still, not too hard a slog. And is it my imagination, or is it beginning to get light? I look behind me, I look to the east, and yes, there's redness in the sky. It's pretty early though, it's only about 6:45. Still, the days are now lengthening, so I suppose it's to be expected. High Rays have reached, no problem. Almost enough light to see Sergeant Mann. I'll soon be able to put my torch away. I've survived the night. Jogging along gently, skirting big pools of ice, treading warily on rock-hard snow. The scramble up, Sergeant Man, and then gingerly descending it before making my way over to the Langdales. I'm losing the odd minute here and then, still. Nothing I can do about it. They don't allow much time on these sections. Not these short ones like Thunnaker Knot, Harrison's Tickle and Langdale Piker's Tickle. God, Piker's Tickle's a tricky climb. It's almost like a rock climb. And Harrison's Tickle isn't so clever either. Right, let's get off towards Rosset. I can see Bowfell ahead. How much trouble is that going to cause me? It's going to be a beautiful day. Not a cloud in the sky, not a breath of wind. Dropping down now towards Black Crags. And I'm making a real pig's ear of this. I'm having to go make massive detours around frozen, iced ground. Just like a skating rink. Not too much snow. pick up a drink at the Black Crags, then the stiff climb up towards Rosset. God, that was inefficient. Go to the peak before Rosset by mistake. How annoying. Then have to drop a bit, then make my way through the maze of rocks, all covered in snow, to Rosset Pike. Bowfell looks as though it'll go okay. It's steep, though. That slanting ramp that leads out onto the summit. I've decided exactly what my route's going to be. Drop now to Rosset Col, and look down on the beautiful Angle Tarn. Right, this is it. This is an important climb. You're committed on this climb. It's steep. Big exposure. A long way to slide if you come off. Let's have a go at it then. First 100 yards slow. Trying to stay on rock as much as possible. God, this snow is so rock hard. And it's got ice in it. Patches where your shoe just slides off. And I soon realise that I'm going to have severe difficulties. I keep trying to make a mixture of vertical progress, climbing up rocks, and then horizontal progress, trying to get between little stones sticking out of the snow. And it's all tricky and extremely hazardous stuff. I'm having to take some absolutely ludicrous risks here. I'm clambering up on rocks, I'm jamming fingers in holes, I'm holding on to little tufts of frozen grass, I'm digging toes in, I'm mantle shelving. This isn't what Bob Grahams are all about. This shouldn't be what a bloody winter Bob Grahams about. And the further I go, the more difficult the ground's becoming. And the more committed I am, because I can't go back now. I get to a point about 200 feet below the summit of Bowfell. And I'm well stuffed. Progress is so slow. I'm now having to do ludicrous things, take bad risks like balancing on a rock, then sprinting for it about 15 feet across rock-hard snow on a steep slope, and then trying to just grab a rock, then staying there and working out my next move. I try to move between areas of rock and then go up these areas of rock. Rock, say, a couple of feet apart, interspersed with big patches of rock-hard snow. It's so risky, though. And eventually, I come to a point where I'm totally stuck. I stand on this little boulder, look around me, try and climb up onto another boulder, have to reverse, and time is just flying past. I've lost 20 minutes on the schedule just here. I spend 35 minutes on this 100-yard section. And although I'm getting close to the top, it is so risky. On two or three occasions, I get to a point where I must just run up about 15 feet to grab the next piece of rock up. Or run across to try and just stand on the next rock coming out of the snow. On one occasion, I lose all ideas. I can't think of any way out of a situation. I look at my watch, and that motivates me to put my thinking cap on again. Time is just wasting. I think of a solution. I run down 15 feet, trying to smash my feet into the snow and break, and line myself up and fit and just plummet into the next rock below me. And then I can traverse across again and try and gain height a bit further along. I get to within 15-20 feet of the summit and make a final run for it. I've done it. I'm on the summit of Bow Fell. I'm on the ridge. I make my way across the plateau. Glad to be alive. But so annoyed with myself. Those crampons that I left at Dunmail Reys. I must have been mad. I risked my life. I've done things I would never dream of doing normally. All to feed this obsession with the Winter Bob Graham. Whatever makes you gives you so much determination? It's absolutely staggering. The progress from Bow Fell across to Esk Pike and Great End is very slow. I mean, I'm keeping to the schedule, but I'm working so hard. Every step is pussyfooting. So much rock-hard snow and ice around. You can't take straight lines. You can't stay on the path. You must stay to the side of the path. Step down each section gingerly. And then jog gently across the surface of a flat section so that you won't be skedaddling all over the ice. Then when you try and climb up onto something, each step has to be checked. And when you step up, you're either taking massive steps to step between two areas of snow. Nothing is ever easy. Great End. Hope I've got the right summit. No time to lose. Run fast off Great End. And Ill Crag and Broad Crag are fairly straightforward. I wonder what it'll be like climbing up from the col between Broad Crag and Scawfell Pike. I pass a number of walkers, mostly well-equipped, but some without even ice axes or crampons. Well, they must consider I'm more mad than they are. But at least I've got PBs, and PBs do grip pretty well. I feel quite safe going up onto Scawfell Pike, and I'm moving quite well now. I must have eaten the right amount of food at last. Well, it's decision time again. I'm on Scawfell Pike. I've got to get to Scawfell. I'm obviously not doing Broadstand. But I don't want to do Fox's Tarn either. It's a hell of a way down there. I'm 45 minutes down on the schedule because of that balls up on Bow Fell. I'm going to have to do Lord's Rake. Well, I wrecked it last Saturday. So, that's a plus. But the snow's rock hard, and I'd like to kill myself on it. That's a minus. I wonder whether I can persuade one of these walkers, if they're going down to camp at Wasdale Head, to lend me their ice axe and I'll leave it at the campsite. I'd like to do that, but I wouldn't like to leave them in a dangerous situation because they haven't got it. I can't ask them, it's too embarrassing. I look across to Mickledore and then up Lord's Rake. And I see marks in the snow. Yes, I think climbers have been up there. So if climbers have been up there, either today or before, since the latest fall of snow, they are likely to be bucket steps. And that's got to be my saving grace. I descend carefully off Scawfell Pike down to Mickledore. Then from Mickledore, I say silent prayer before dropping off Mickledore to the west and to the foot of Lord's Rake. I look up it and it looks as though it might be okay. The first 50 feet are on rock and that's no problem. And then I come to the snow and the angle steepens up to about 45 degrees. Not obvious sign of these steps. I sweep out some steps. Yes, there are bucket steps. They're not very big, though. In fact, they'll only take about an inch of PB. I fiddle around with my hands, and some of the steps do go in a bit further. I wonder whether there's any safe way of pulling myself up. Ah, what about these ice axe holes? My first finger fits rather nicely into these ice axe holes. So you stick your finger in about half an inch to just above the first joint. You pull up on the finger, and at the same time, you stand up on the step. Yes, this is going to be the way. Dust out more steps, keep in balance, pull up on the next ice axe hole. This goes on for about a quarter of an hour. Bloody cold in this gully, it really is. My hands are like blocks of ice. Still, this is a damn sight safer than either Fairfield or Bow Fell were. The top of the gully's now only about 20 feet away. Yep, I've cracked it. I've done it, I've cut to the top of the gully. Two switchbacks, each of which has an icy descent, lead me onto the shoulder of Scorfell. Well, there's still hope. Isn't that amazing? I'm on the last peak of this longest section, and although I've lost even more time, I'm about 50 minutes down, there is still hope. Because all the hard climbing bits should be out of the way now. I leave my rucksack and stride up to the top of Scorfell, then jog back down, sliding a bit on the snow, pick up the rucksack, and then follow half an hour jar down this awful descent into Wasdale. It's very hard because even when you get below the snow level, the ground is just absolute rock. And at certain stretches, streams are frozen and overspilled onto the ground, creating big areas of ice that aren't obvious. You've got to be so careful. I drop right down into Wasdale and feel pretty jaded as I gently jog across the bottom to the warden's house. The warden of the National Trust campsite. The spot where I've arranged to leave the next card and even more kit. I can't stop long here. I must keep going now because I'm 50 minutes down on schedule and I've got a hell of a lot of time to make up. I need to make at least 30 minutes if I'm going to get within the time. It's possible, but only possible if I don't meet any more obstacles. And who knows what could be ahead. Could be icy sections, iced ridges, tricky rock descents off the last peak even. Anyway, no time to think about that. Let's get away from here. Fill up with water from the stream flowing into Wastwater and start the long slog up Ewbarrow. I've left quite a lot of kit outside the warden's house. I've left gloves. Hell of a lot of food that I don't think I'm now going to need because I haven't been eating as much as I expected. And I must say I'm finding this climb up Ewbarrow a bloody struggle. Feeling so tired, just ready to have a rest now. So I sit down, close my eyes, think, this is nice. And then my determination comes back. Get up, you idle bastard! You're not going to gain anything by just sitting here. You will never succeed like this. I'll take a few more hundred steps up the fell. And flop down again. Sunshine's beautiful. I look down and I see a car pull up outside the warden's house. It's Jill. She's come to pick up all the gear. I have a sudden feeling of guilt. We've got all these people out got this all organized. You're not going to bloody well fail now. So what the F are you doing sitting down here? Get up. Get up that bloody hill. Get back on schedule. Get this show on the road. I have a big drink. I eat some food. And I get myself going. U-bar has reached. And I've taken about 2 minutes longer than I should have done to get up it. Not very impressive performance, really. Right, Red Pike next on the list. Oh, and I'm just not running very well. I'm just not very fresh. Nothing I can do about it. Drop to door head. Then start the climb at Red Pike. To my horror, the stream halfway at Red Pike is frozen. I was counting on that to pick up water. That means I've got no more water on this bloody section. Oh, I hope I've got enough fluid inside me. I take off my jersey, strip to loafer top, try and not overheat now, but also I mustn't get too cool. Find that if I run downhill with just the loafer on, I get quite cold because of the chill factor that's generated. Right, I'm doing better going at Red Pike, and I've made a few minutes going up there. Schedule's 48, and it's taken me 46. Oh well, every couple of minutes is going to help. Schedule allows 23 minutes to steeple. I think I can improve on that. A good line's taken, round the side of Scope Fell, and it's going better. Leave the rucksack, and then just go out and back to steeple. And then I can see Pillar ahead. Things are definitely improving. Still very icy underfoot. But I'm feeling better, I'm feeling fresh from myself, and I'm feeling positive. Stone, you have got a chance of completing this run. Pillar is reached. A few more minutes clawed back. And then the long descent to Black Sail Pass before Kirk fell. There's a hell of a struggle up Kirk Fell. I decide not to go up the gully that we use on the Fell Race ascent because I've had enough of epics on this trip. So I go up the main ridge along the boundary posts. And at the bottom, it's an unbelievable struggle up this scree run. Because the problem is, you've got rock hard scree and you step on it and you don't make any impression. So you've got your feet at about 45 degrees, and as soon as they tear the few pebbles and little stones off the surface of the scree, you just go skidding back down. So you can just step up with one foot, brace yourself with the other foot, take another step. And of course that isn't even normal Bob Graham pace. Anyway, we're gradually getting up Kirk Fell. And the amazing thing about this section is that it's as if I've had a guardian angel with me. I followed a pair of PBs all the way from Doorhead. And every 50 yards or so, I keep coming across them. He's obviously checking a section of the Bob Graham out. Although I don't see them on my way out to Steeple. So we follow these PBs off Kirk Fell. And I realise he must be a local. He must have some local knowledge. Because he takes a rather neat route that I know about, but which misses out the subsidiary summit on Kirk Fell and leads off towards Beckhead. But then even better than that, he gets a superb descent line to join the track off Kirk Fell. He joins it on the descent just about 150 feet above Beckhead. Very impressive. It's dead icy here. And I think now that with the sun dropping, everything's going to harden up again and become really slippery. I must be extra careful. I get the same problems climbing the first few hundred feet on Gable as I have on Kirk Fell. But I am beginning to make some impact on this schedule, and I am clawing back a few minutes. Lights begin to fail on me now. and I reach the top of Gable at 16:35. I'm now only 23 minutes down on the schedule, which is actually means I'm within 24 hours, because the schedule is about 23 and a half hour schedule. So there is a chance of making it if I don't meet any more obstacles and I manage to keep the schedule. Two big ifs. I could make it. You don't know, this really helps the determination. You can't possibly afford to fail now. You're just within spitting distance. 4 hours of home. So I drop off, cut off Gable just as it's coming dark. And what a dangerous descent that is. Ice everywhere. Hard snow that people have been skidding down. You can't get any grip. Climbing down so slowly that yet again time is lost on the schedule. And I've got an additional problem now. Darkness is coming and it's going to be dark before I get to Honister, which means I can't keep to the schedule on the section to Honister. The moon's out, fortunately, and as it gets dark the moon takes over. I get my torch out at Windy Gap, ready for its inevitable use somewhere between Green Gable and Brandreth. I run as fast as is safe between Green Gable and Brandreth, tripping every so often and cursing as I do. I must try and get to Honister before it's completely dark, otherwise I'll be losing valuable time coming off Greynots. It's a really steep descent off Greynots, and it could be unpleasant. Greynots is reached a few minutes after Brandreth, but really it's dark. The torch lights my way, and initially I get a good line as far as a fence corner. I then use the old technique of trying to keep 100 yards away from the fence line which leads down into the Honister quarries. But I get onto really bad ground, big rock steps covered in ice. That mixed with steep grass which has got ice in it from overflowing streams that have frozen. And worse than that, I see a light on Honister, and I think it's on in the hostel, but actually it's on in the cutting sheds. Which means I aim for the wrong buildings, which takes me too far left. More time lost. And eventually it takes me 22 minutes to do what should have taken me only 15. God, this round is just unbelievable. You try so hard and yet you're foiled all the time. You can never guarantee that you'll make time on any one section. It's so tough. Well, I've got just over 3 hours left now to get to Keswick, and the schedule for this last section is 2:50. So, theoretically I should be able to make it, but not if I'm going to lose any more time. So, in order to speed myself up, I cut everything to a minimum. I leave my rucksack. I just carry with me my bum bags, extra food, my spare torch and my main torch, my cagoule, and I set off up Dalehead like an absolute idiot. I'm feeling strong actually. I have been eating much more in the last 3 or 4 hours, and within half an hour I'm on top of Dalehead and I'm feeling good, I'm feeling great. My enthusiasm's there. I know that it's possible now. All I need is 2 more good sections. And I have good sections to Hindscarth and then to Robinson. And on each, I clip minutes off the schedule. Robinson's the last peak. And as I climb up from the col between Hindscarth and Robinson, I realise that, barring a disaster, I'm going to make it within 24 hours. I hardly dare think that I'm going to make it, because surely some other problem's going to arise at the last minute which foils the whole attempt. Top of Robinson's reached, and I take time off just to look around me, and in the moonlight, look at all those peaks, some of which have been deadly, almost, some of which have been a pleasure to cross, but all of which formed the greatest challenge of my life. Well, they say there's no gain without pain, and certainly been true of this round. Okay, well, that's enough contemplation. Let's get off this mountain. And the last descent. It's a tricky one, though. And the first part goes okay. Just hard snow. The usual stuff. Check every step before you take it. And then the big rock steps. Can I cope with them? I can't see they're going to hold me up that much. But then they are hard work, these steps. They're absolutely covered in ice, which is just water being flowing over them, which is frozen. And I lower myself over them really gingerly, making sure that I don't slip on the next step and then slip down, say, 12 foot rather than 6 foot. Well, that's the first rock step out the way. I can see the other one in the moonlight. Gradually make my way down to it, and then I get down that one as well, losing time. But I'm still got time in hand now. The very steep descent net by the holly tree on rock-hard grass and mud. Mustn't slip down here. I don't want to hurt myself. Amazing thing is, I haven't actually fallen over once in 24 hours. Down to the bottom of that. That's all the steep descents over. Onto a rough reservoir track, 3/4 of a mile of that, just being careful not to skid on the pools of ice where streams flow onto the track. And I come to the first house, High Snab, run down the tarmac to Little Town, Newlands Church, and that's it. Just 5 miles of road left now. Put the brain into neutral, put the torch away, and just get jogging and walking up the hills. It's in the bag. Well, almost in the bag. I've just slipped and gone skidding across a massive pool of ice on the road. Do you know, this round isn't going to give up easily. I can just imagine falling over, breaking a leg, and dragging myself along the road into Keswick. And then getting there over time. Anyway. The road goes okay. It's getting colder and colder as I drop down to the valley. Temperature inversion. Then, along the footpath from Portinscale, and I'm just 1/2 mile out of Keswick. Up the high street. Lump in my throat. I know I've cracked it. I'm there. Ralph's there and he meets me, shakes my hand, and he takes photographs. Pete Parkins and Uni. I know it's under 24 hours. I don't even stop to look at my watch. It's in the bag. So many memories from that run. The toughest, the most dangerous challenge I'm ever likely to undertake. You haven't got anybody to fall back on. You're totally reliant on your own abilities, your own sense of your only mountaineering sense, and your self-preservation. I can't help thinking, though, that I was treated well by whoever it is up there who looks down on us, because I must have used 8 of my 9 lives. To have survived is a major triumph. To have got round is almost of less significance. The round is something I'm very proud of. I always feel good after I've finished a long run. But to have succeeded here on something that I suppose I've been trying since 1979, and then to have completed it in its purest form, is a great feeling. I may never get the chance to do something like this again. You have to savour these moments and enjoy them whilst you can. I'm just glad to be alive. I'm also pleased to be the only person to ever gone round the Bob Graham route solo, unsupported in winter. The weather was kind. The conditions underfoot were incredibly unkind, some of the most dangerous I've ever known in the lakes. But it does seem that on this round you can't have everything your way. And maybe, to make it fair on everybody, you shouldn't have everything your way. It's a great leveller, this round. And in these sort of conditions, it's an amazing mental challenge as well as physical. Because you must bounce back after every setback. You must have confidence and be optimistic at all times. Because if you are, then amazing things are possible. Anyway, that's it.
Thanks again to Martin for a bit of fell running history there from 1987. This has been Go Mountain Goats podcast. I'm Finlay Wild, and see you next time. Thanks.